Welcome to GonkCast, a long-form discussion podcast about the music of English electronic duo Autechre, album by album, EP by EP. I'm Gabe.
I'm Dan.
And this is our first episode after completing the main AE discography. As I mentioned before, from here on out, we're going to be covering all the odds and ends you miss when you just focus on Autechre's albums and EPs. And our first topic is the Japanese bonus tracks, kind of attached to the main discography, but also kind of separate. And we decided we'd have a little fun with the Japanese bonus tracks by ranking them. There's a total of 9, from worst to best, in our opinions, of course. On that note, we'll do another listener email episode next week, so if you take issue with our lists or have thoughts on anything Autechre at all, really, let us know. GonkCastPod@gmail.com. For our next proper episode, 2 weeks from now, we'll be rewinding the clock all the way back to the beginning with the Warp Tapes 89 to 93. So tell us what you think about that release as well. Again, GonkCastPod@gmail.com. Don't forget that we'll be covering other odds and ends like the Artificial Intelligence compilations, Autechre's remix work, Gescom, their collaborations with the Hafler Trio, and a lot more. We'll give you a heads up about these topics as we get closer, of course, but you can always start sending us your opinions on that stuff early, and you can let us know about less obvious odds and ends that we shouldn't miss as well. I'll say it one more time, GonkCastPod@gmail.com. All right, Dan, there's not really any background info to cover here, and I think we should jump into our list as soon as possible, but there are a couple big picture questions I want to ask up front, some of which we can maybe return to after we worked through all 9 tracks. First, just for the record, had you spent much time with the Japanese bonus tracks before this week, or were they mostly new to you?
They were mostly new. Really, I think only the two newest ones people had emailed us, and so I had listened to those before. But all the other ones, I don't think I had ever listened to the other ones before. Or if I have, it was, you know, once or twice, and I don't remember it.
Yeah, I mean, you know, along the way, some people have recommended certain Japanese bonus tracks, and I've, like, sort of checked them out. Hadn't really spent much time with almost all of them before that. And I guess on that note, you know, we didn't receive very many emails on these tracks, which I guess goes to show how, like, kind of under the radar they are. But I will try to, like, kind of credit some of these people that first started bringing them to our attention, some of the bigger highlights among the Japanese bonus tracks. But yeah, not really. I mean, most of the stuff was, like, totally fresh to me. Now, the second question I want to ask you is, and maybe everybody already knows this, but why are Japanese bonus tracks a thing? You know, why do so many releases, even beyond Autechre, seem to have Japanese bonus tracks? And, you know, what do they usually consist of? Just, like, cutting room floor material? I don't know how well-versed you are on this, but it just occurred to me that maybe some of our listeners, you know, have no idea what this phenomenon even is.
Yeah, it's basically like a way record labels convince, like, Japanese labels to import music. You know, they add something, you know, extra to it. So I guess I've always wondered, is that sort of like to then get people that are big fans, you know, to then export it, you know, to get those bonus tracks?
Yeah.
Or if it's just solely, you know, for the Japanese market. But it's odd because, you know, other countries don't do it. It seems to be like a specifically Japanese thing.
Yeah, I mean, my understanding is, and I was trying to do, like, some extra research on this, but it's still a little bit of a mystery to me. But, like, for some reason, I don't know why I couldn't get an answer on this. It's got to be some tax regulation thing. But, like, physical media is way more expensive in Japan than it is here, mm-hmm. to the point where these, like, Japanese listeners could import Western pressings of things for even cheaper than they could just buy a domestically produced Japanese version of the same CD or record or whatever. So it's pretty common, again, well beyond Autechre, to, like, attach some little bonus, you know, incentive for the Japanese market to, like, purchase a domestic product rather than import it. So that's why these exist. I mean, the third question I want to ask, and this is the one that I think we'll have to return to if we haven't already sussed it out in the course of discussing the tracks themselves, you know, just to sort of touch on up front, like, what is Autechre's approach to Japanese bonus tracks? Are they, like, missing pieces to the puzzle, just little curios, throwaways, or what overall sense did you get?
Well, I think, you know, we'll get into the weeds of that, you know, as we get through the list. But it seems overall they're sort of just little curios. You know, they don't seem to be, you know, I'll go ahead and spoil. I didn't, you know, unlock the keys to it. You know, the greatest Autechre song ever or anything. You know, they definitely seem like, you know, just little odds and end type of, you know, extras.
Yeah, I mean, I think sometimes they really feel like little just extras for that, like, pure practical reason of, like, Warp needs to serve the Japanese market with some little extra bonus thing. But I feel like, and again, we can sort of talk more about this as we go along, but there's like a general approach where it seems like Autechre does not want to screw up the record, you know? Like,
yeah.
they either feel really separate from the record, or they're like, they feel like codas or something. You know what I mean? Like, they don't ever feel like, because we've talked about, like, along the way, right, when we do these bonus listener email episodes, we've talked about some of these Lucy's, you know, and, like, what's that, like, JNSN code, right? Mm-hmm. Kind of like an interesting track, just for one example. And it's like, you know, they have that stuff sitting around. You know, they have, like, other alternative versions of tracks sitting around because they've released some of that stuff as well as bonus tracks, like Sinistral Sentinel or something like that. And it seems like they don't want to put that stuff on because it feels too much like a kind of a banger. You know what I mean? Like, it would sort of disrupt the overall flow of the record. They just seem to, like, and again, we'll talk about this more, but, like, concerned with not messing with the album too much, even though they got to add a bonus track.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, you know, we've talked about it throughout the entire podcast. Like, Autechre is very, you know, into sequencing a record, you know, correctly. And so I think it definitely doesn't seem like it's their really idea, you know, to add a bonus track. You know, it seems like it, you know, it's a necessary evil kind of thing. And so, yeah, I think you're right. You know, they stick these on here that are, you know, but pretty separate from the record either. You know, like I said, we'll get into it as we go through each song. But yeah, it's never like, it's never like, oh man, that should have been on the record, you know, or that adds something to the end of the record. You know, it's always fairly separate.
Yeah, it's just like not intrusive. I guess there are lots of
different
ways they approach this, but it's not like imposing on the album itself. But all right, without further ado, let's get on to the list. And I'm very curious if, you know, how similar our list will be. But again, let me remind you, there's 9 Japanese bonus tracks in total, and we'll talk about the albums they come from and all that stuff as we get to them. I should also clarify that we are not discussing the digital exclusive EP here, which was only released on the Japanese iTunes store. So, like, kind of like a Japanese bonus thing. But we included that in our discussion of the Quaristus era a few episodes ago. And it's not really like a Japanese bonus track, quote unquote. But anyway, Dan, what is the worst Autechre Japanese bonus track, in your opinion, your number 9 Japanese bonus track?
Yeah, for me, it was a fairly easy choice. I went with Zurich 2001, which is the bonus track. I hoped so. It's the bonus track from Untilted from 2005. If you've never heard this one, it on paper, it sounds interesting, but it's an audience recording of, like, the last minute 51 of a live set, which I assume was in Zurich. But the thing is it's a pretty poor audience recording. Like, you've got people whistling and hooting and hollering all over it, and it's literally just like the end of a set. It's like, you know, the big final climax, but you're just getting that. And so it's like, it almost just kind of sounds like a noise set or something, especially with the recording being so bad. Like, there's not very much, like, dynamic range. It just sort of sounds like a mess.
Yeah, it's like a crowd recording kind of a thing. It's like, you know, got this kind of blown out lo-fi quality because of that. But yeah, it's kind of just like glitchy noise blasts at the end of a set, some like kind of lasery sounds. I guess it goes on. There's like these little random sort of tones that are kind of sprinkled over the top, but divorced from the set, it sounds like a sound check or something. And honestly, the way we're describing it still might be, you know, giving it too much credit, because it's less than 2 minutes long and the last like 30 seconds are just people applauding.
Yeah, that's true. Mm-hmm.
It almost feels like a troll, you know, because it's like, I understand that these people who are applauding, I guess, just watched a set, right? But for us, we've just heard like some random ass, lazy ass noise blasts for a minute and a half, and these people are like rapturously applauding. You know what I mean? It sounds like so comical, like, wow, they're applauding that.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. Like I said, you're basically just getting the climax, which, you know, divorced from the rest of the set, you know, to just get that you know, triumphant close is so weird. And then, yeah, you're right, you know, just to hear 30 seconds of cheering for, you know, to us as just the listener sounded like, you know, pure dicking around, it's really strange. It's just like, this is the one that feels the most like the record label is making us stick something on the end of this record, you know? It just very much seems like we don't care, this isn't our idea kind of thing, you
yeah
know?
It really does feel like that. It probably feels the most like that out of the ones we'll discuss. And so it kind of makes you think, like, you know, if you just listen to this one, right, you would get the impression that, okay, Autechre doesn't give a shit about Japanese bonus tracks or something, you know, which would, I think, be sort of wrong, but it is sort of true, right? Like I was saying earlier, that it's like kind of evidence of them not wanting to disrupt the album. You think about Untilted ending with Sublimit, right? Like one of their most epic closers ever. It's just really clear that they wanted to put something on the end that in no way would anybody confuse it with part of the album. You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, this clearly sounds like a bonus track. I mean, you can hear the cheering, the people, you know. If it had been like a soundboard recording,
yeah,
it could be confused, you know, with a studio type thing. But yeah, I mean, this is like very obviously not a part of the record.
Yeah, and you know, the other weird thing about it, right, is that it's from 2001, so we're going back to like Confield times.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that too.
And it's hard to get like a handle on, you know, I want to say like it sounds Confield-y just because it's so abstract, but it's like literally just blasts of noise to close out a set or something. So it's like, I don't necessarily want to ascribe that, you know, to it, but it's weird, right? That it's actually so distant from the Untilted era and the whole style of Untilted, right? So it's just so funny that Untilted is almost like this beat heavy, you know, we talked about how it's got like kind of a almost old school drum machine worship vibe going on. And then it's going to end with like some Confield noise blasts, you know, like so weird.
Yeah, I would love to like know how they picked it, especially like this part of it. I mean, it really feels like, you know, pure trolling.
Yeah, and I guess I will say that it's so short that it's like it's never going to bother you. Like it's not annoying, right?
No, yeah, yeah.
But so that's my number 9 as well. And so let's hear your number 8, just so I don't want to jump ahead of you and get confused myself. But what is your number 8?
Number 8 for me is probably the hardest one to pronounce here. XEKTSESSQL from Oversteps in 2010. This one, it's like a lot of these bonus tracks. It's very, very ambient, very ethereal. To the point where I feel like this one's just sort of lacking much substance at all. You know, it's just sort of,
yeah.
I get that they're trying to not, you know, step on the album, but this one is just, it's just almost like, I don't know. I feel like it being the new closer of the record, it's so like immaterial. I don't know. It would be a disappointment to like listen to the you know, Japanese CD, I think.
But it would kind of like work in that way. I felt like this is an example of like a different kind of approach that they sometimes, maybe even more often, take with these Japanese bonus tracks. Is like you theoretically could tack it onto the album because it is so unobtrusive. Like,
yeah,
it's really just kind of like, you know, I put this a little higher than you, and I'll save my number for when we get there. And it's not that I like necessarily love it or anything, but it's kind of like this very long fade in, and there's a fade out as well. So it's almost like just a minute of stuff. It's kind of like these weird synthy like chunks, you know. It almost sounds like an Oversteps track really far away and really like fractured and disintegrated or something, where you're just like, you can kind of hear like there's some melodic line or pattern there, but it's just like these little chunks, you know. It looks like you're looking at like a cubist painting or something. That's kind of what it sounds like. But it's so distant, it's so quiet, there's so much empty space, it just almost sounds, it's like verging on nothing. Mm-hmm. And you know, you think about like UOP, which is the last track on Oversteps, kind of like epic, kind of an epic closer, one of their more epic ones, I think. And this would be like a totally, you know what I mean? It wouldn't like disturb anything, even if you did think it was.
I think like you said, you know, some of these work as like a little coda or something. And this is in that category, which I think, you know, more of them probably fit in that category than the Zurich, you know, 2001 category. But yeah, it just sort of, that's what like, I like that in, you know, if you got to have a bonus track, you know, that's a good way to do it, you know, to be unobtrusive and stuff. But it's also, it's just so like lacking in substance that it's like not really worth, you know, tracking down or anything, you know?
Yeah, yeah, I agree. But it just almost feels like just loops running out or something, or like, mm-hmm. you know, the distant memory of the, you know, closing song on Oversteps or something like that, or one of the other songs on Oversteps. Like, so it kind of works that way. And I guess that's why I put it a little bit higher. You know, maybe that's not fair, but it's just like, I could sort of imagine it closing the record and it wouldn't be a big problem. But I'll move on to my number 8, which is MCR Quarter, which comes from Confield 2001. I don't know if this is part of the actual title, but for some reason on Wikipedia, it notes that it is recorded live at Band on the Wall, Manchester, 1998. So another one of these live tracks. Is this anywhere close for you?
No, I actually have this one fairly high.
Interesting.
I guess I'll save the number.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, well, we can have the conversation now, but I mean, kind of like a... you know, it's another like kind of bootleg quality, like crowd recording live track. But it is like a high energy kind of high BPM, like acid jam. Like it's kind of like a total ripper, and you know, lots of acid squelches, lots of lasers. There's like kind of this like crackling, like electricity, like sort of attached to the snare. And there's like big phaser whooshes. Eventually it kind of shifts into like this kind of pummeling like kick snare pattern is almost like the bed for like this wall of stuttering noise. Like it gets like almost Merzbow-y. And what's funny about it is like I have a hard time separating what is like an intentional sound design choice and what is just the low quality of this recording, you know? So my issue is like it's sort of interesting, but it feels like, I don't know, it feels almost like a cavity job, like Bass Cadet kind of throwback energy, but like dirty enough to be on EP7 or something, which is more of like the era it comes from. But it's like 11 minutes long. And I feel like it just like totally wears out its welcome.
See, I think this one like works so much better than the, you know, other live, you know, Zurich one. This is the like earliest release of a live, you know, Autechre thing too, which is pretty interesting. I think this one's like actually, you know, if you're going to give like a chunk of a live set or something, like this one, at least, you know, being 11 minutes and change, it's like you're essentially getting like a whole, you know, song or section of that live thing. So it makes a lot more sense than just getting like this closing snippet from Zurich. And I think, this one, like, I think the audience recording like sort of works to its favor because it is such like a banger, like you said, you know, because it's like you get to feel that energy of the room and it seems fun as hell, you know? It definitely is in that category that Zurich's in of the like, this is not part of the album, you know, we're just sort of throwing something on here. But this one's like actually kind of fun, you know? I think it does have that cavity job, you know, sort of throwback feel, but I think it's better done than that record. Just this one, one was one of the most fun of these, you know, bonus tracks. Like I mentioned, a fair amount of these are fairly ambient. So it was kind of nice to have like this one that was, you know, a real slapper, as the kids say.
Yeah, I agree. And like, I wouldn't be, you know, I wouldn't be mad at all if like, heard this played in a club or something.
Yeah,
like
yeah.
It would be a great time. But just as like a listening experience, it just feels like a little tiring. I mean, those kind of like throwback tracks were never my favorites. And it's funny because, you know, we talked about stuff like Bass Cadet sounding kind of dated on, you know, Incunabula. And this is a 1998 recording. So it's like a serious throwback in 1998. And then it's added to the end of Confield, which is like the most forward looking, you know, Autechre album. So it's like, obviously, like they're really clearly drawing that distinction. Like this is not part of Confield, which I appreciate, but it feels so, I don't know, kind of tired to me. It feels like this could be almost any like artist, you know, if it was like I downloaded on Kazaa or something and it was like credited to Aphex Twin or something, I would believe it, you know?
Yeah, I get that. I think, like you said, you know, them really saying that this is, like, divorced from Confield, I kind of like that. I mean, I've talked about it a lot. I hate, like, the idea of bonus tracks, you know, especially right. with an artist like Ottecker who puts, you know, so much effort into sequencing and the way the record set up and everything. You know, they're antithetical, like, to the way they work. So I think, like, something like this, if you have to do it, you know, if they're forced to do it, it works pretty well, you know. I think it's, I don't know, I just thought this one was, like, so fun, and maybe this is a bad way to, like, look at it, but, you know, essentially I was listening to these bonus tracks, like, as their own album, you know, just mm-hmm. you know, back to back. And this one was always sort of a you know, a respite after so much you know, weird yeah. ambient ones.
Yeah, I agree with that. I mean, I felt like I've sort of felt that, but then other times I felt like it was, like, totally disruptive in the course of this little playlist I had made. But I'm sure a lot of fans agree with you. Now we're on to your number seven. So what is that?
Yeah, my number seven is P1 or PL. I can't read my own handwriting. P1 P2 plus from 2020. This one, another, like, very ethereal one. This one, it's just Whistling Wind, basically. And many times it's almost not even there anymore. Just, again, you know, just so lacking in any substance. The only thing I do like about this one, and the reason I put it higher than the last one, is I do like how frequently that wind like threatens to feed back, you know. Yeah. It's like it gets so, like, high and piercing that it's like it's gonna break through, you know, and just lose it. You know, of course it never does. But yeah, again, this is another one. This is in that same you know, kind of coda classification, like the Oversteps
yeah.
one.
Yeah, this is also my number seven, actually. And this isn't my observation. I read this elsewhere, but it makes perfect sense. It kind of sounds like Pendulum Music from Steve Reich.
It's
really just, like, very light and slow and subdued, but it's, like, kind of squealing, like, whining feedback, you know. You know, what I like about it is that there are a couple different line, like, feedback lines, you know. It theoretically could be a performance of Pendulum Music, because the way they're, like, kind of interacting, like, some of these low squeals, some of these high squeals. And there's kind of, like, an interesting, I mean, it's so light, you can, like, miss it if you're not paying close attention, but this kind of, like, I don't know, crystalline, like, twinkling kind of sound, like, sort of emerges, like, little waves of it kind of emerge at the end just to add, like, a little something. But yeah, it kind of just, like, slowly comes into being. It's, like, very distant, very quiet, and then just sort of, like, comes to a halt, and, like, this long reverb trail kind of, like, fades away. It, like, was barely there. Not a lot to remember about it, but I agree, you know, coming at the end of Plus, it's totally unobtrusive. It would feel like a coda if you somehow, you know, mistook it for the actual closer of Plus, which I gushed about this last episode, but TM1 Open is, like, one of my favorite Ottecker closers of all time.
Yeah.
This would not mess it up at all. Like, this would be perfectly fine coming up after it, because it's, like, just sort of some, like, drifting, like, feedback ambience to just sort of, like, settle things.
Yeah, I could see that. You know, it is sort of like, you know, that you know, coffee after a big meal or something, you know, like you know, just settling your stomach or something. Yeah, I could see that.
All right. Well, I mentioned that was my number seven as well. So what is your number six?
Number six for me is NUNR6D from Choristus, okay. From 2008. This one, it's pretty rad, like, sound design. Yeah. It's, like, very spooky. It's got a soundtrack quality to it, you know, pretty David Lynch, kind of sounds like Eraserhead or Twin Peaks or something. But again, you know, it's kind of a one trick, you know, little pony here, very short, just another one of these coda, you know, not intruding on the record. And not adding too much. But I think this one
yeah, is, I don't know. Did you mention it's on Choristus? I feel like maybe.
Yeah, I did.
It's on Choristus. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Which I think, you know, Choristus, we talked, is sort of that, it kind of has that grab bag, white yeah. album sort of quality. So I think of any album to have a bonus track, I think Chorus right. is one of the ones that will be, messed with the least. And so I think this is a cool one. This is the first one I think I actually enjoy of these, bonus tracks here. Because, I mean, it is really like some interesting sound design.
Yeah, I feel the same way, and I actually put it a bit higher, so I'll save my number, but... I kind of like this one. This is like one of the ones that I actually genuinely like. And part of it is what you were saying is like at the end of Choristus, it's not bothering anybody, because Choristus has that quality. And, beyond that, the whole Choristus extended universe, like there's room for one more track,
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
If I'm listening to the whole Choristus era, throw this on, So this almost feels like the most essential of the Japanese bonus tracks in a weird way, because it gives you even a little bit more insight into this like kind of sprawling wild era. The one thing I don't like is that I feel like the last track on Choristus, Auth 9X, is a little like droney electroacoustic on its own. And so this is like more, we didn't need another one coming right after that.
Yeah.
But in a way, it almost like takes it down even another notch. It almost like becomes more tuneless and more like formless. But that being said, I do feel like, unlike, P1, P2, for example, and the Oversteps bonus track as well, this feels like sort of a developed composition. It feels like sort of contained.
Definitely.
Piece, mm-hmm. And I totally get it. And yeah, I wrote down like the Twin Peaks comparisons. Like I wrote down Ominous Whoosh is kind
yeah,
of.
Yeah, yeah. That's what
here.
I was thinking.
But I do kind of like that. It just feels like, maybe it's more, tuneless, devoid of music than anything else on Choristus, but you get a little bit of this stuff on Choristus, and you could totally hear the sound palette of that, like kind of drenched in reverb, like kind of gurgling and this like cosmic droning, whooshing stuff. There's a little bit of like glitchy scraping and tinkling and stuff in there as well. I just sort of like appreciate, I feel like on the first listen, I did kind of want to shout out listener Mike, who like back when we were talking about Choristus, like wrote in to kind of urge us to talk about this track. But it just feels like when I first listened to it, I was like, it's kind of like a, the lesser version of Auth 9X. But the more I listened to it on its own, especially divorced from the album, I was like, it's kind of like an interesting, like well-developed electroacoustic piece.
Yeah, I mean, it's something, if it was in the middle of Choristus or on yeah. Quad Range or something, like, I'd like it, maybe wouldn't highlight it as a favorite or anything, but I would definitely enjoy it. And I mean, like I said, too, with the way the whole, Choristus expanded universe is anyways, it's the one album that can very easily have a bonus track, and... Right. I think this is the one that so far works the best.
Yeah, I agree. So that was your number six. My number six, we already talked about, which is Zexy's Squall from Oversteps, however the hell you say that, which we talked about enough. So what is your number five?
Yeah, my number five, Clincher, I guess it would be called, from Move of 10 from 2010. This one, this is the first, besides the live ones, kind of a banger, It's got this like real, like sputtering beat that I really enjoy. In fact, I had like, this one and the last one, the Choristus track, I kept kind of switching them back and forth in my list, but I really love this beat on Clincher here. It sounds like a steam powered engine or something, like an old, like a thing that would shuck corn or so, like an old farm equipment, like one of those engines that like, could just barely kind of run. But then it's got this like really interesting, like bubbly kind of synth in the background. I mean, this track, a negative of it is it's again sort of repetitive like a lot of these are, but this one, it's fun. I like this track. This is the kind of track that I wish they had like a Lucy's sort of compilation, because I think this is one that is worth seeking out if you haven't heard. I don't know that it needs to be on Move of 10 or anything, but it's definitely like one of these ones that's like worth hearing.
Yeah, I put it quite a bit higher actually, and I'll save the number again, but I just like really dig it. I mean, I think the beat is like awesome. It's I totally agree with you, this kind of like rickety, like I sort of wrote down like the snare and the hi-hat in particular sound sort of cheap, like some cheap, shitty drum machine. And mm-hmm. like the kind of lopsided quality of it just sounds like these drum machines are barely working anymore, you know? And so I really appreciate that. I mean, you know, granted, it just kind of loops. Like, it just starts and it loops for like the 5 minutes or whatever. But there's a lot of texture and movement on the top. You know, there's like this gurgling, this nice kind of like chugging, like borderline krautrocky bass note to it.
Yeah.
That gives it a nice groovy quality. And there's kind of like some glassy synth tones and stuff. And all that kind of texture is just kind of like oozing and moving around in a way that honestly transfixes me for the duration of the track. And honestly, the more I thought about it, it's like Move of 10, you know, I'm not so worried about like disrupting Move of 10, you know, like
Move of 10
just felt like this little collection of like fun to be had, you know, like for the people who weren't that into oversteps. Like here's some grooves, like some real bops to like get you through it if you're not a big oversteps fan. And it's fun for that like kind of loose, you know, compilation-esque quality. And so it's like, I feel like you could tack this onto the end. I mean, there's something a little bit epic about the closer on Move 10, but you could easily tack this on. It would only add to the fun. And honestly, if it was on Move 10, it would be like in my top half of favorite tracks on that record.
Yeah, it probably would be for me too. I haven't listened to it since that last podcast, but yeah. I think off the top of my head, it definitely would. And yeah, you're right. I mean, you know, with an EP, which it's strange, this is the only like EP that has one of these bonus tracks. But yeah, I mean, you're right. I'm not concerned about, you know, messing up the flow of those EPs, especially, you know, Move of 10 is one of those for sure, because you're right. You know, it's just sort of like for the stuff that didn't fit on oversteps, you know, that had this different, you know, quality to it. So yeah, this one definitely is worth tracking down.
Yeah. I mean, do you feel like it's, like the fact that it's actually a fully developed kind of track with a beat and everything, which is like really the exception when it comes to these Japanese bonus tracks, does it like kind of, I don't know, work for you as like evidence of their attitude toward Move of 10? That like, yes, they wanted this to be just like a fun grab bag kind of a thing?
Yeah, I think so, because you know, you're right.
Otherwise, they wouldn't be willing to like put a full, you know, what I mean, like a full fun track.
This one, like, really, you know, like we've been talking about, there's sort of these two categories, like the, you know, the live throwaway thing, and then these kind of, you know, ambient codas. This is the one that doesn't really fit in either of those, and I think it is because it's from the EP, and you know, they're probably not as concerned with messing up the you know, flow of it, the sequencing, and you know, because it in itself is sort of this grab bag quality. So, you know, in Japan, they just grabbed one extra, you know, finished track. And so, yeah, I think that's why I like this one, you know, more too, because it does have that quality, you know, it's, you know, fully developed. I mean, even though it is just a loop, but plenty of Odd-Dekker songs are just a loop, you know, and it definitely like works.
Yeah, so that was your number five, and my number five is N. Kerr from Sign, from 2020, of course. I know that people kind of love this one. This is another one that feels sort of like fully developed. I don't know, it's quite striking because it's got this kind of like, you know, fiddle sounding, like kind of arpeggiating pattern running over it. I mean, it really sounds like a violin or something. And then you get these really lush, like very dramatic, you know, Blade Runner style chords underneath. And I don't know, what's so interesting to me is it's got like this kind of, there's something like generative about the fiddle pattern, but there's like so much human drama to the chords underneath. Like it really nails that same thing that I like so much about Sign, which is like that kind of meeting place of the generative and the human, you know? And, you know, there's no percussion, there's no like abrupt changes or anything. It's almost got like a credits or rolling kind of quality. And then it has sort of like a long, long fade out, but I find it immediately like arresting. It's kind of like one of the most striking and distinctive of the Japanese bonus tracks. And yet it almost feels like, I don't know how to put this, but it's just like, I almost feel like you just can't follow Arcast off of Sign with anything. You know, it's just sort of interesting. They went for like another sort of dramatic, like melodic piece to close Sign. I know that it's like not fair to put that on it because it is just a bonus track, but you get what I mean? This is actually almost the most intrusive of the bonus tracks.
Yeah. I put this much, much higher. I really tried not to judge them like in my list, you know, like because I agree, you know, I think this one is sort of intrusive. But I like what you said about, like, you know, it sort of has this, like, as the credits are rolling feel. Especially if you put, like, plus and sign together, and, you know, we talked about in our original first listen sort of thing that we both, you know, came to the agreement that, like, listening, if you're going to put them together, like, plus sign, you know, kind of works the best. And, you know, so after having, like, this, you know, 2-hour thing, it does sort of feel like a movie, and having this in credits, you know, kind of song works well. I like that analogy. I like it a lot. I mean, this is like a really, like, pretty, like, sort of, you know, beautiful sounding thing, which, you know, is something you don't frequently get with Autechre. And yeah, it has this, like, it skirts this line of generative and human and everything. You know, I think it, like, sums up the, you know, kind of feeling of Sign, you know, so well. It's one, a lot of these tracks, you know, I don't immediately know what record it's the bonus track for.
Right.
You know, I feel like this one, though, I do, you know, like, I feel like I could guess this is Sign's bonus track, or even if it wasn't, I would say, you know, it should be. And this is one that, yeah, I think a lot of fans, like, you know, we got some emails about it. Like I said, I had heard this one because people kept sending it to us and stuff. Right. And even, you know, I looked on Rate Your Music, you know, how you can go through the different releases. And I went to all the, you know, records and with the Japanese bonus tracks, and surprisingly, like, most of them, nobody even has commented or anything, but you know, this is the one that has by far the most comments, and really seems like loved, and not just in a, you know, obsessive fan, you know, kind of way. You know, this one seems to have, like, genuine love towards it.
Yeah, and I totally get that, because it is, like, it's very striking. I feel like it's the first one on my list that's, like, really striking and, like, worth seeking out. I feel like from here on out, for me, these are, like, worth seeking out for the hardcore fan kind of thing. But
I agree.
But this one, yeah, it's just really striking, but it's just sort of like, I know it's not fair, but I just kept, like, judging these tracks on, like, you know, would I like it as part of that? Like, does it add something to the album for me, or, like, show me more about what they were doing in that era? And I just feel like Sign didn't need this. And a lot of times I sort of appreciated how they were, like, trying not to step on the album, but this one sort of does step on it, even though it's a great track. I feel like maybe some people take umbrage with that sort of criteria, but, anyway, we aren't. Yeah.
I was just gonna say, I didn't look at mine that way, but I don't think it's necessarily, like, the wrong way to look at it. I kind of took it as, they're kind of being forced to do these. And so I really kind of tried to, you know, divorce them from the record. But my number four is 18 Kiosk from XI from 2013. This is another one in that ambient, you know, ethereal category. But I think this one works best. You know, it's long enough to, like, really kind of stretch its legs out. You know, I think, like, the problem with some of these ambient tracks here is that they're 3 minutes, 2 minutes, 4 minutes, and it's just not, you know, I've talked about it, you know, with Quad Range and stuff. I think, like, when you're going to do something, like, incredibly repetitive and very, you know, like, droney, length works in your favor. You know, it's just like, you got to build up that, like, monolithic thing. And this one, I mean, it's only right under 9 minutes, which isn't, you know, the hugest track in the world or anything, but I think this one, you know, it stretches its legs out a little bit. It is just another kind of loop, but again, I think, like, with these loops and stuff, like, you know, I can't remember which one we talked about, but you know, some of them, like, when it keeps going, it's like you get in that state where it's like you can't tell if you're thinking something is changing or if it's legitimately changing and stuff. And just so many of these, like, you know, don't have enough time to get there. But this one kind of does. You know, it's one of those kind of things that could, like, go on forever. You know, it's just 9 minutes because that's when they pulled the plug on it, which I like that. I think Autechre, like, does that so well. And I really like the sort of bell sounds that are here. You know, it's like they almost sound real. They almost sound, you know, synthesized. It's a you know, another you know, tip of the hat to their sound design abilities.
Yeah, I put this one higher, and I gotta say, I feel like it's like a genuinely special Autechre track. I love the sound of that, because it sort of starts with this kind of metallic electroacoustic droning for a moment, and a lot of these bonus tracks are firmly in what I would call electroacoustic territory, you know, and then that kind of droning sort of swells into like a metallic kind of ringing, which then like kind of gradually shifts into, you know, I wrote down like, you know, plates and silverware and stuff like shaking and rattling, you know, it's got this kind of like clanging sound that sort of becomes like a pattern, you know, an actual like rhythmic pattern, but it's got like sort of a melody to it as well. And then, I mean, what's most surprising is underneath, you got this kind of plucky bass and even some like kind of chords kind of come in eventually, that is just playing like a very major key, like back and forth two chords thing, you know, like a, I don't know what it is actually, but like a C to G kind of a like really basic thing, you know. And it's got like this kind of cute, comfy, like peacefulness to it. I mean, it really feels like a weird kind of peaceful coda after like all of the drama of the last track on XI, which is, you know, YJYUX. I feel like it would work perfectly on XI, honestly. And you know, and XI also has like a bit of a grab bag quality, even though we talked about how like perfectly sequenced it is. I mean, it's unobtrusive. I think it's fascinating. It's like very comfy. You know, it feels like sort of minimalist, but like not underdeveloped. Like it feels like this is kind of exactly what this thing needed to be, you know?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Not underdeveloped is a good way to put it. Yeah. And again, this sort of like the Choristus track, like works with the record, because, you know, it's got kind of that same, you know, XI took like that kind of grab bag thing and then made, you know, these EPs that form, right, you know, a larger LP. But I think, like, you know, if you stuck this on Elevent, which is, you know, kind of the next EP in that set, you know, or next, you know, disc in that set or whatever, it would definitely work. I mean, it would work if you forgot about vinyl sequencing and you stuck it somewhere on XI. I definitely think it would fit in, and it would not, you know, take away from the record or anything.
Yeah, and it's kind of similar to XI in the sense of, like, you know, that, and kind of similar, honestly, to what we were talking about with the what is it, Clincher from Move of 10, the Japanese bonus track. I was just sort of like it's like a set foundation with this kind of back and forth like chords with those bass plucks. But then, you know, you mentioned like not being sure if you're being tricked or if it is just pure repetition, but I just feel like there's lots of variation and movement, maybe not in like the actual like sounds, but just like in the texture of those sounds. I mean, it really holds my attention for like the entire time. And I do love that it's long enough to like actually live in it. Really, I think a special track for me. But that was your number four, correct?
Yeah.
Okay. So my number four, we already talked about, is New NR6D, another hard one to say, from Choristus, which is sad enough, but one that I really, really grew on me over the course of this week. What is your number three?
My number three, we also already talked about. It was your number eight, the MCR Ooh. Quarter from Confield 2001, that other live track. Yeah, I mean, we had pretty differing opinions on that one. I think that's, knowing what's left, I think that's really the biggest difference we had.
Yeah, I'm really shocked, because, you know, we, like, throughout the course of this podcast, I feel like neither of us were particularly happy when they did like a throwback, you know, just acid rave up kind of a thing.
No, so it's just really I think it's literally because it was that audience recording, you know. It was just like, oh yeah, acid throwbacks like would be pretty rad to like be there for, kind of thing, you know, which maybe, you know, maybe I'm unfairly, you know, ranking it high just because it seemed like a lot of fun or whatever, but really, like, listening in this playlist, like, I really like enjoyed each time I would come to this one.
Well, you know, my number three, if I'm doing my math right, is going to end up being your number one, which is Medry from Triripete. Am I right?
There you go. Yep.
Okay. Well, you know, this one, I think, is a fan favorite for sure. it's got this kind of like grainy, like lo-fi quality to it. I don't know, just like immediately strikes you as like classic Autechre or something, with this kind of like bit crushed groan and then these like plucky sounds that are very, I don't know, they're like reminiscent of Rizdio from, you know, the last track from Triripete, but also very reminiscent of Sepater, the first track on Chiastic Slide, which is interesting because this would be like the, if you were listening to the discography in order with the Japanese bonus tracks for some reason, this would be like the link between those two. But yeah, I mean, it's like really, I don't know, it's fascinating. It's got these like really kind of lush, but still like very grainy kind of like synth tones and stuff. And you know, I love it. I love the sound. It just sounds like, you know, peak level Autechre. You know, not to say that like Triripete was their peak, but for me, it's like just something that like kind of hits me in like the nostalgia zone, like really as soon as I hear this. But it just feels like a little underdeveloped. This is the one that I was going to sort of contrast, actually, but I didn't want to spoil it, with 18 Kiosk, which to me sounds like it's like very minimal, and yet it sounds like exactly what it needs to be. Medjri feels like it's like 75% of the way there, and it's striking how it just kind of like ends. It almost sounds like it was about to do something and it just sort of like cuts off like really abruptly. You know what I mean? It feels like a little unfinished.
I do get that, you know, but that, you know, it's a bonus track kind of thing. It does sort of feel like, you know, cutting room floor a little bit. But I mean, you said it, you know, this is an extra track from, you know, one of Autechre's mini peaks. You know, Triripete, it probably is my favorite Autechre record. It's definitely like the one I have the most, you know, nostalgia for. And I mean to basically hear a track from that era that I don't think I had ever heard before, or you know, at least didn't remember, is a pretty, you know, special thing. I love that like plucked bass, you know, sort of sound. It's almost like, you know, that the cheap, you know, 80s Seinfeld, you know, keyboard bass or something. But it just, they use it so well and in such like a cool way that it really stuck out. I really enjoy this track. I think it's worth you know, tracking down.
Yeah, I can't disagree with that. I mean, it feels like, yeah, a little underdeveloped, but it still, yeah, just hits me with like, I don't know, it's got like this nice like kind of slow snake-like quality, but it just feels like it keeps sort of like picking up and then like receding, and I just like kind of wish, you know, this was a little longer, like a little more developed or something, but I just can't deny that it's a great track. So that was my number three. What is your number two?
My number two is Incur from Sign.
Okay. All right. Anything to add?
No, I think I said it all, you know?
Yeah. All right. Well, my number two, we also talked about, I guess it's going to be that way, but is Clincher from Move of 10. Again, just like a bop and like totally, I would happily add it to Move of 10. And like I said earlier, it would be like one of my like favorite tracks for Move of 10, honestly. And your number one, I already spoiled it, but it is?
It is Medjri from Triripete.
And my number one, if you haven't figured it out by now, is 18 Kiosk from XI. Again, perfect coda and honestly just like a really special track. Like almost the one here that, let me think, tracks 5 through 1 here on my list from Enker, New, NR60, Medjri, Clincher, and 18 Kiosk are all like really great tracks, those ones. But 18 Kiosk to me feels like, I don't know, it's like a kind of a Autechre highlight or like just something special in their whole discography. Wrapping up then, I kind of wanted to ask, I guess I could just sort of jump ahead and ask that very question. Like, did you feel that coming away from this like week spending with these Japanese bonus tracks, that there were some like gems that were like, these are must hear kind of Autechre tracks, or you just feel like they were all kind of like weird extra curios for the hardcore fan?
I don't know if anything was like, you know, you gotta hear it. I think everything's maybe, if you're a hardcore fan, you know, they're worth checking out. But definitely, I mean, we've said it, you know, they need to, like that EPs collection, you know, they need to do something with these yeah, Lucy's and stuff, because there really is like, you know, some gold here. I think, you know, Clincher is such a great one. 18 Kiosk, you know, obviously, you know, Medjri, Incur, are ones that I think, like, you know, people should hear. I, you know, I think if they made, you know, some sort of compilation of these sorts of things, you know, those would be the tracks that people, you know, talked about and yeah, would, you know, would be the higher rated ones. You know, I like MCR, you know, Quarter. I like it in the like, you know, the way I like a live album kind of thing. But you know, so I don't think that maybe, you know, that one wouldn't be, you know, one you gotta hear, even though it was pretty high on my list. But yeah, I mean, definitely from basically six on, for me, were, you know, gotta hear. I mean, really, there was only three of them that I actively disliked, and two that I just sort of thought were, you know, non-material.
Yeah, and I did want to shout out before I forget, listener Eric, who's on the same page as me. He wrote in back when we were talking about XI to, you know, say that we should listen to 18 Kiosk and that it's one of his favorites from the entire era. And, you know, I kind of agree with him. Again, we didn't get very many emails for these very undersung tracks, but I agree with you. There are a couple here that really deserve more attention than they're getting. On the other hand, there are a couple that are very insubstantial, like really feels like some sort of obligation. And they were like, what could we put on here that would, you know, step on the album least? So having walked through it, I guess I'll re-ask the question. Do you have any new insights on like how Autechre kind of thinks about Japanese bonus tracks in general?
It's basically what I guessed it would be. You know, they felt like, you know, if I had to guess before I heard these, you know, they seem like, since they take such care in sequencing and all, that they would be what we got, you know, just sort of making sure you don't step on the record, either with it being, you know, so different, or, you know, just a palate cleansing, you know, coda kind of thing. So it's not really surprising. Yeah, I think it, you know, confirmed my suspicions.
See, I was like honestly surprised by that, really? Because I would have thought that these would be like obligatory things, but that they would, you know, sort of ignite that thing that you were talking about for yourself earlier, which is like, I hate bonus tracks because they ruin things, you know? And I was kind of surprised at the amount of care they seem to take to not ruin things. Like, there is pretty much nothing here. You know, I talked about like a little bit about my complaints with the Sign bonus track, about how it does step on the album a little bit more than I'm comfortable with, even though it's a really cool track. With the exception of that, like, nothing here would be a problem if tacked on to the end at all. I just sort of thought it would be like, you know, some sort of Lucy, you know, that they like kind of warp force them to add it. And they were like, well, we didn't use this track, so let's add it. And it would piss me off that it's coming at the end. And it would really, you know, I'd be worried for our Japanese brothers and sisters who are maybe thinking, you know, that this belonged
to be
on
there,
the album.
Yeah.
But you could never make that mistake. And even if you did with most of these, it wouldn't affect anything. You know, I was actually surprised by that care.
I think I assumed that care, you know, was there. I mean, because we even talked about it with I think it was XI, you know, how they wanted to do this just, you know, grab bag thing, but they could not do it. You know, they had to sequence it and had to, you know, make it as if it worked as these separate EPs and stuff. And so, like, I assume that would translate to these bonus tracks, that they wouldn't be able to just say, fuck it, you know, put whatever on there. You know, I think,
yeah,
I assumed that they would put great care. I mean, honestly, the only one that surprised me is Zurich. That was the most like, well, I'm being forced to do this.
Yeah,
you know,
kind of, yeah.
But even in doing that, I don't think, you know, if somebody Japanese goes to the store, picks up Untilted, doesn't know anything, has Zurich on there, I think they can figure, oh, this is a Japanese bonus track, you know?
Yeah.
Or maybe they just call them regular bonus tracks, but,
yeah,
you know, you know, but I think besides that one, you know, that's the only sort of like, I'm being forced to do this kind of thing.
Yeah, but this is like leads me to my other question I wanted to ask is like, and maybe we can't possibly figure it out because we don't know what conversations Warp is having with Autechre, but it's like, there are a bunch of albums and EPs that don't have any Japanese bonus track. And it's like, what is the deal with that? Why do some of them have it? Is it like Warp always asked them to do it, and these are the only cases where they were like, okay, we figured out a way to not fuck up our album that we worked so hard on. Here you go, Warp. And the other ones, they were like, you know what? Honestly, with Chiastic Slide or something, we simply couldn't do it.
I don't know, because I think if they had the option of saying we simply couldn't do it, why would they ever do it, especially with Zurich 2001? And
right.
And it's not like, okay, that was their first record, you know, they didn't have any pool. I mean, it's 2005 by that point, you know, they've got plenty of pool. I don't know, it is strange that like only Some have them. I mean, even when we were, you know, preparing for this podcast, we kind of thought there were going to be more of them, when we were hunting them all down and whatnot. I don't know. I would really like to know what that is. I did notice that either all of them or maybe there was one that wasn't. They're all like released by a specific record label in Japan. And so maybe those are just the ones that record label was going to. Yeah, I don't know enough about it, you know, but like, you know, those were the ones that they were gonna release under their name, and so they need a bonus track. I don't know, but also I didn't look to see if the ones without bonus tracks had that. I am right now though, and it does look like there is a Japanese version of LP5 which doesn't have a bonus track, but it's not released by that record label was called Beat. And the LP5 is released by Sony in Japan. So so maybe it just has to do with the record label or something. I don't know. If anybody knows the answer, I'm genuinely curious.
Yeah, that's some good. That was some good, like, just like right on the moment detective work you just did. But it's like, I don't know, the absence of them on some records, on many records actually, just kind of makes you like, you know, like raise all these questions, like what was the deal with these ones?
Breaking news, I've ruined that theory, because a Draft, which also doesn't have one, is on that Beat record label.
Theory debunked.
Myth busted.
Well, you know, whatever the case is, it does make you like wonder, like what is the deal. And in my just sort of crackpot theory would be that like these were cases where they didn't feel like they could add something without screwing up the record.
What is Zurich then?
Yeah.
I would 100% agree with you, but what is Zurich?
Yeah, like why wouldn't they just do that with like pick a like 5-year-old, you know, live thing and just put the last minute and a half of it on the end of all the records. Well, let me ask you. I guess I wanted to sort of wrap up, you know, how did it go this past? Did you enjoy yourself listening to these?
I did, because I mean it was 9 Ottoker tracks that I wasn't really familiar with, hadn't maybe ever heard, so that's always a good time. It was maybe a little odd, like the way we had to listen to them, you know, kind of their own album, because they're clearly from different time periods, different, you know, styles and everything. I would say I enjoyed it.
Yeah, I mean, I thought it was kind of fun to go back, because I was like very disciplined about not going back, and so then you just hear those like warm tones of Medley.
Yeah, exactly.
And like,
yeah,
you know, lovely. But yeah, it was fun. I mean, I just feel like I'm curious about how many listeners are going to listen to this hour long discussion of such obscure tracks that like nobody seems to care much about. But if anybody's made it this far, I mean, I would say it's fun if you're you know, the kind of Ottoker fan is listening to an Ottoker podcast. At least half of these are like really fun to hear. The other half are like little curios, but you know, they're not so long that you're going to like hate that you sought them out. But, you know, there's some gems here. I would recommend checking them out.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's like an hour's worth of music, you know, if you've listened to us, you know, drone on about them for an hour, you know, go ahead and listen to them.
All right. And, you know, again, I feel like this would have been even longer somehow if we got a little, you know, a few more emails, but not a ton of emails on the Japanese bonus tracks, but understandable.
Yeah, definitely. All right. Well, get some emails for our email episode. You can do that gonkcastpod@gmail.com. We'll do one of those listener episodes next week. Next proper episode is going to be 2 weeks, and that is on the Warp Tapes 89 to 93. We'll want your opinions, hot takes on those. gonkcastpod@gmail.com. If you like the show, help us out. Subscribe. Leave us a 5-star review wherever you get your podcasts. Look us up YouTube, stay connected, Twitter, Instagram. Those are @gonkcastpod, and we'll see you next time.
See ya. Yeah.